on to this week's really big fan podcast. I am your host, Chizuk, as always, hanging out with my wife and co-host, Acronym.
Hello.
And we've got a really big show for you here on the Really Big Fan Podcast today. Lou has joined us. He just darted in the room.
Yes, a Lou is now our guest.
He
best number one.
Heard my radio voice and said, I'm on my way, Dad.
Come on.
Come on, get on the couch, Louis. Louis is our cat, for those that don't know. His name originally was Lucifer, but he's dumb.
So he's a Lewis.
So I decided to name him Lewis instead, because he reminds me of Lewis Tully from Ghostbusters. He's sweet, though.
He is very sweet.
He's a sweet little stripy boy.
And now we have a Kylo in the room, too.
Kylo's like, what are you guys doing? So we got the whole family in here tonight for the podcast. No, we do have a great show for you. Mr. Tom Savage is going to be joining us and talking about his collection of classic Star Wars figures that he had at one time and ended up parting with for very good reasons that he'll go into later on in the show. Before we get there and before we do what we always do on this show, let me start the show by saying thank you to everyone who subscribes to our Patreon at patreon.com/reallybigfanpod. For $5 a month, not only do you get ad-free versions of this shows, please pretend that there are ads in our shows, but you also get an extra content. You get what's called the Really Big Fan Podcast Double Feature. I cracked you up with that one, didn't I? You were waiting for that.
I hit my vape. and I'm coughing and I'm trying to hide it.
You get extra episodes of the Really Big Fan Podcast Double Feature, where me and Mr. Mike Pandoff talk about some of our favorite movies of all time, introduce them to each other, and then ultimately get let down when we don't like them.
Yeah. Which is what's going to happen the next episode, because...
Yeah.
That was bad.
I apologized. I apologized.
I didn't even watch the whole thing and it was bad.
Yeah. So, for $5 a month over on patreon.com, you can subscribe and get your hands on those. But for now, let's take you to the headlines. It's a busy week.
Yeah.
Busy week headlines wise.
I have three.
You have three?
But they're short.
Okay, well, let's start. Here's one that I thought is probably the biggest one, and that is the FTC has, this week, banned non-compete agreements. The Federal Trade Commission issued a final ruling making it illegal for bosses to make workers sign non-competes in any scenario, and voiding nearly all existing non-competes. This is important to us, even though we're not in radio anymore.
Yes.
Because we like watching professional wrestling. And wrestlers typically have a 90-day non-compete.
Mm-hmm.
So all the guys that got let go, like Jinder Mahal, and just this week, was it
Cameron Grimes? Yep, Zia Lee. I forgot.
They can show up anywhere,
which is awesome.
Immediately, yeah. Good for everyone who had a non-compete that is now null and void.
No, I straight up was thinking of, like, everybody in radio that we know.
Yeah.
I was like,
for them too.
I was like, bro, you can go anywhere now. You don't have to worry about that year.
Yeah,
or
you get
6 months.
You get let go on a Monday, show up on the opposition on Tuesday.
WCW.
That's how that shit should work. So good for everybody that has to put up with that kind of bullshit.
I got one for you.
Okay.
So if you were watching the Coachella live streams, which some people are going to go at, but I was watching.
We talked about it last week. We got to see No Doubt reunite.
Yeah, that was pretty great. But something happened during Kid Cudi's set.
I remember hearing you in here go, oh, no.
Yes. So I tuned in like right as it happened, like no joke about what happened here.
Right.
So he was on stage and he decided he was going to jump off the stage.
Okay.
And I don't know if he was trying to jump into the crowd but couldn't clear the gap, or he chickened out when he went to go jump because it looked like he just sort of hopped off and hit his foot the wrong way, and they had to carry him out, and the set ended.
Right, I remember you saying that.
The crowd was like, it was during like a remix of Pursuit of Happiness, so the entire crowd's just and jamming, not knowing where Cudi went.
Right.
And he was on the ground. So the update is he has a broken callousness And I don't know what part of the bone in the foot.
I saw him say he broke his foot.
Yeah, he said, I'm headed to surgery now, and there's going to be a long recovery time. He has to cancel his tour so he can focus on getting better so he can rage with everyone again. And there's just no way he can bounce back in time for 100%. So everybody will get a full refund on his shows. But that's a bummer because he doesn't tour all that often. I was really jazzed about it because I've never gotten to see him before. And now he's got to cancel the tours.
You know who can help him with that?
Hmm.
Dave Grohl.
Yeah.
He's got a throne and everything.
Yeah, Dave Grohl. Get in touch with Kid Cudi.
He let Axl use it when Axl hurt his foot.
That's true.
So.
And honestly, I would say that Kid Cudi is probably a better person than Axl Rose.
Yeah, he's probably easier to get along with.
Yeah. So, Dave Grohl, call Kid Cudi.
Call Kid Cudi. He could use your help. We got a new trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah.
Which I think I showed you last night. It's definitely a Red Band trailer. Wolverine says the F word, I think, 3 or 4 times in it. And we get the view of the villain, which is a bald woman that I'm assuming will be Cassandra Nova from the X-Men comics.
At first, when I saw her, I was like, so is this the, God, what was her name?
From Doctor Strange?
Yeah, I was like, is this the such and such we have at home, the Supreme Sorceress or something?
Right.
But it's not her?
No, it looks like, because of the way she's dressed too, Cassandra Nova has showed up in that outfit, so everyone's expecting that is, which in the main Marvel Universe comics is the twin sister of Charles Xavier that he strangled in the womb and somehow came back to murder Genosha. Which we got to see in the X-Men 97 show without Cassandra Nova.
Yes.
There's a really neat article on Kotaku where they talked about... when the first Deadpool trailer hit, there's that scene where he's laying on the ground and you see the shadow of Wolverine.
Yeah.
And we all attached to the fact that there was a comic on the ground next to him. Mm-hmm. And it's the Secret Wars series from 2015. So there was a mini-series that was part of the Secret Wars that was based on the X-Men 92 cartoon.
Mm.
And in that miniseries, Cassandra Nova showed up without all that weird backstory, the Xavier backstory, but as some kind of like cosmic sensor.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, what better way to introduce Deadpool to the MCU than for him to have to go through somebody that would not allow any of his shenanigans?
Yes.
Just like you see in the trailer where he says Feige has all the list of cocaine.
Oh, yeah, all the lists
and
of
you
cocaine.
He can't do
you
any
can't
of it.
Do this. You don't want to build a snowman?
I do, but I can't.
I can't.
But it looks like it's going to be a hell of a movie. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that makes more sense than it being Xavier's sister and all that stuff. I mean, like, yeah, that's probably part of the backstory, but
right.
Like that makes a lot more sense than
absolutely
what I was just seeing in the trailer.
Whenever they introduce some of these characters to the movies, they always have to kind of like fiddle with them a little bit if they're too weird.
Yeah.
So
I saw a joke. Well, not so much a joke, but somebody pointed out the fact that like the last couple trailers that contained Wolverine, no matter where they were contained, there's always a back shot of him in a bar.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, well, there was definitely one in Logan, and it's lined up exactly the same.
So yeah, and the one we saw in the trailer looks exactly like the first X-Men movie.
It also looked like he was in that bar that Venom ended up at.
Maybe.
It really looked like that at first.
That would be an amazing cameo.
Oh, yeah.
To have Venom in the Deadpool and Wolverine. That would be absolutely amazing.
I'd be totally for it.
What else you got?
I got another stupid Coachella one real quick.
All right.
So, some people don't know, but some people do, that if you are at a festival, there's always a time curfew that you have to abide by.
Okay.
So at a certain point in the night, like, you have to be done with the noise.
Yes.
Coachella went over.
Not surprising.
And usually what they do is they charge $20,000 for the first 10 minutes.
Okay.
So, like, they'll be fined that time it goes past curfew.
Is that universal? Because I know, like, Pine Knob has one of those, like, too, where it's a curfew.
This particular one is for Golden Voice with the operator of Coachella Valley Music and Arts and then the City of Indio.
Okay.
So where it's held is essentially...
They know it's Coachella. They know it's they have lots of money to play with. And they're like, look, if you go over curfew, this is the fine.
Yes. So performances must conclude by 1 a.m.
Okay.
On Friday and Saturday nights, midnight on Sunday. Golden Voice, which is the production, is going to be fined $20,000 each time that goes over curfew. But once you go over curfew, it's $1,000 a minute starting after the sixth minute of curfew.
Oh, shit.
So if you go minutes over, you're like 5 minutes over, you immediately get hit with $20,000. But then every consecutive minute.
Because you said it was 10 minutes for $20,000?
It was six.
Okay, because I thought, oh, then everything ends at 109.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of things. No, everything has to end at 105.
Yeah, so it Lana Del Rey played 13 minutes past the 1 a.m. curfew. So they're on the hook for 28K.
Woo!
Somebody else went over, too, but only by, like, a few minutes. Like,
right.
It wasn't anything absolutely awful.
Can you imagine what the chatter was like on the radios for the stage crew while Lana Del Rey continues to play?
Yeah, no, I have a feeling they're just like, well, we can't do anything about it. Like, it's Lana Del Rey, so we're just going to let it run.
Right.
But, like, yeah, she ended up going way over. And I think that somebody might have went over last weekend, too, but this one's the one that's making headlines. There is another instance where that happened last year, and I think it was like Frank Ocean or something went over.
You would think they'd put into the contracts for people that are playing at Coachella, especially if they know they're on last, that if they go over, they're liable for the cash.
Right. I don't know if there's any setup with that. I didn't read as far into the article, but I know that with certain venues here, there's the same policy.
Right. That's why I asked if it was universal, because I can't imagine Pine Knob giving 20K over.
It's not 20K.
Whenever somebody goes over, but I know that they have fine.
So I'm trying to remember who it was. Someone did it at LCA. I think it was Drake.
Yeah.
Maybe. That sounds like a Drake thing to do. I'm going to blame Drake for that. but like, there's a certain number per minute that you go over, but I think whoever did that the last time here paid it themselves.
That sounds familiar, yeah.
So I just don't remember who it was, but there was someone that did go over here and they ended up paying for it out of their own pocket.
Right.
Because they didn't want the city to have to do it. So that is a thing.
That's wild.
Sure, it happens for everything, but yeah, $28,000 just for going over.
Hope she sells a lot of records.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how, like, people love her, but I don't know what, in the grand scheme, how popular she is these days. But because, like, her Born to Die era and then, like, the Paradise Edition were, like, her biggest albums.
Sure.
At least in my brain, those are the most legendary. But, like, I didn't really continue with listening to her after a while. Like, I listened to her during my hoe phase. I put her away when I was done with my hoe phase. So I'm like, I don't know if some of the other music, because it kind of got some of her archetypes are very like old Hollywood.
Yeah.
But it is also very submissive.
Oh, so her and Toni Storm would get along fabulously.
Oh, yeah. Toni Storm would probably want to get played out at a...
By Lana Del Rey. Or,
yeah, something like that.
Speaking of Toni Storm, the AEW had their pay-per-view this weekend.
Woof. I really hope she was kidding at her... The more I read into it, the more it looked like she was sort of kidding, but I'm just like... AEW, why are you bringing up WWE so much?
Because they feel burned.
It's dumb.
They feel burned by CM Punk, and they really are mad about it.
But you're dragging everybody else into it. Well, I don't... Will Ospreay is Will Ospreay. If he is that group's Logan Paul.
I saw somebody tweet something that is a really good point about the Will Ospreay bringing up Triple H in an interview. The guy who broke a throne at an AEW pay-per-view is the WWE's world champ.
Yes.
I don't think it's going to stop. If Will Ospreay is as talented as Will Ospreay is, I don't think it's going to stop WWE from knocking on his door if they want him.
No, it's really not. And he's being kind of a little prick about it or whatever. I know that, like, I watched that clip and I just, like, look at Renee and I was like, this poor woman. She looks so uncomfortable with the whole thing. But it's just like... It's not WCW versus WWF or WWE.
Right.
It's not. It's a completely different ballgame. You guys can both coexist without it being this ridiculous. Now, what I will say is I laughed very hard at a meme that I came across, which was a screenshot of a tweet saying that Dave Meltzer was booked for AEW this week so he could blow Will Ospreay right in the ring.
I did see that. I did see that. Well,
I popped for that.
So Ospreay fought Bryan Danielson.
Yeah.
In a banger. People are saying we're match of the year before they even touched. Like once the entrances were over, the crowd started chanting, holy shit.
Yeah.
They were like, we know what we're about to get. It is one of the coolest wrestling matches we will ever see in our lifetime.
Right.
Holy shit. Swerve Strickland beat Samoa Joe.
Yep.
For the AEW heavyweight title.
I saw him give his flowers to Kofi.
Nice.
He said in that the media scrum, like, I am the first black champion here because of Kofi Kingston.
Nice.
And then everybody else was like, well, what the fuck about Ron Simmons?
Right.
Like, what the fuck? But I'm sure that Swerve grew up watching Kofi.
Yeah.
He's a younger dude.
Also, Willow Nightingale beat my spooky love, Julia Hart. She's hurt, so she has to go rehab, but
yeah.
I love my spooky bitches.
So. Yeah, what's the other one? There's Abaddon. There's
Abaddon, Julia Hart. I can't remember who her minion is. I love Rosemary over in TNA.
Yep.
She's fantastic. So
you don't have a spooky bitch in WWE, do you?
No, I had Alexa for a year or so.
Yeah.
And now there's no spooky bitches.
I mean, Rhea's the closest.
Is as close as I can get. Mommy's as close as I can get. So another one bites the dust here. Target is reporting that they will be removing DVDs from their shelves.
Not shocked.
Based on our guest shopping patterns and broader industry trends, this is the official thing, we're transitioning the limited assortment of DVDs we carry in our stores to Target.com, where guests will continue to find thousands of titles. Moving forward, we'll offer select DVDs in stores when they are newly released or during key times throughout the year when they are more popular, like for gift giving during holidays. So Best Buy doesn't have physical media anymore. Target's getting rid of the physical media.
Walmart's the only one left.
Yeah, and Walmart's physical media ain't a great selection either, so.
Truth. So we've got a nationwide ban on our hands. As of today, we've got President Biden signs law to ban TikTok nationwide unless it's sold. So the deets on that is saying that the Chinese-owned TikTok has to be sold within a year. And they're calling it as the most serious threat yet to the video streaming app with America's tech war with China. So they're all just basically concerned, quote unquote, that, ooh, they're finding out private information about our country because they're on TikTok. But the issue on the flip side of that is everything that's being censored by every other government entity in America can't censor TikTok because it's not owned by the government. So, if it gets sold to an American company, I'm sure the American company is going to mandate that there are certain things that can't be shown on there anymore.
Sure.
Which means we lose access to on-the-ground reporting in Gaza and many other things that happen when injustices happen because the media tries to hide some of that. And I know I sound like a conspiracy theorist, but this is literally how the internet works now. So make sure that you get whatever news you can from respected sources. And honestly, a lot of people have been saying to look at other countries' reports on us instead of looking at reports coming from us, because things like NPR or other places that are not...
Is the BBC still thought of as like a reputable news source?
I think so, to a degree. There's it's like anything like overseas.
Yeah.
Tends to be, except like the Daily Mail. Like that's trash.
Yeah, I've heard the Daily Mail is not a respected news source, but I'd never heard anybody go off on like the BBC. Reporting, especially on countries other than themselves. I don't know. I could see where some of their stuff could be pretty skewed, especially European countries or even, you know, countries within their landmass.
Oh, yeah, totally. There's no way, I guess the bottom line, no matter what, is that there is no such thing as unbiased journalism anymore, which is how you're taught when you go into journalism
school. Yeah.
Is unbiased reporting is the best reporting that you can give, because then you're giving both sides of the story and you're not putting your personal opinion into it. Now, I'm not saying that, like, that's how I lead, like, the acronym zine stuff or anything like that, but I will say that, like, on the massive scale, like, politics-wise, even Time Magazine and Newsweek have very different standards of what they think.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of crazy, but...
Lou just jumped up on the couch and is like, quit being serious, Mom!
Stop serious!
Stop seriousing!
So, I guess basically all we have to wait and see what's going on. The TikTok CEO, he believes that he will win in court, and users should not expect issues with the app, saying, rest assured, we aren't going anywhere. The facts and the Constitution are on our side, and we expect to prevail again. So
I'm certainly of the opinion of... this is the thing you decided to focus on?
Yes.
Of all the things in our lives that make it so much harder to live, you know, inflation is on the rise, groceries are expensive, everything is too expensive. We got big companies that are just breaking the law and flaunting that they're breaking it, and environmental issues. Nah, TikTok. TikTok is the thing I'm gonna really focus on.
Yeah, well,
that's the problem I'm gonna fix.
They're gonna focus on that because that's the thing that exposes them. That they want to shut down right. The information, because if we're kept in the dark, then we don't have access to that information and we can't fight back. Not only are we all exhausted and completely burned out from the pandemic and have tons of effects that we have yet to even understand. And Lou just hopped up on the
dryer.
But with all of that in mind, they want to make sure that we don't have the ammunition or even the drive to fight back. And if they shut down TikTok, they close off that information gap that's empowering everybody right now. So.
I don't have a good joke for that.
No, there's no joke. There's no segue. So, Fortnite Festival.
Yeah, so the new season of Fortnite Festival launched yesterday and added Billie Eilish. Yes. To the game, so now you can shoot down people as Billie Eilish. It's a real good likeness of her. That's not her.
That's a teddy
that's
bear.
But yeah, look at that.
Oh yeah, that looks perfect.
Yeah, it's really good.
I mean, she doesn't look like human with her pretty ass eyes. So
right.
It works out perfectly.
So there's a new season pass. There's some new songs in there to play. It's funny because every time they do a season pass, there'll be like one rock song.
Yeah.
Like last season pass was Lady Gaga and Black Hole Sun from Soundgarden was in that season pass. The first season, it was Fall Out Boy's My Songs Know What You Did in the Dark.
Yeah.
And if you don't buy the season pass and you can't unlock that song along with all the other cool shit that you can unlock. Mm-hmm. This time around, it's The Cure's Friday I'm in Love.
Huh.
That's the one song. And then there's a couple Billie Eilish songs that are in there. But the thing that's really cool is that Harmonix, who developed a rock band and stuff and is doing Fortnite Festival, explains that the songs, all songs that are in Fortnite Festival now and all songs going forward, will now have what's called pro lead and pro bass options, letting you connect a guitar controller and play them as if you were playing Rock Band.
So how do you connect a guitar controller?
Well, the Switch doesn't have any controllers, except for there's a third-party controller that was made that you can use for that. But if you're playing it on the Xbox or the PlayStation, those are rigged to recognize the old guitar controllers from previous generations. If you have a PS3 guitar controller, you can plug it in USB-wise to the PS4, and it will recognize it, and you can boot up Fortnite and play it like you were playing Rock Band.
So now are you going to be fiddling with the PS4 trying to see if you can hook the guitars up to it?
I bought Rock Band 4 for the PS4.
So you have
I have a guitar.
One guitar.
I have one guitar that I can play on the PS4. So yeah, I'm going to be trying it out on my PS4.
Yeah. So
when I get an opportunity just to see, because that's the preferred way to play.
I really want them to put like all the instruments together. Because...
that's the thing I wonder is if they're, you know, obviously I'm sure that's what Harmonix was thinking, is like, we'll start with a controller, and then if we can get this thing to take off, we can eventually move it into just being Rock Band.
Yeah.
But the hard part is going to be the vocals.
Yeah.
Because they've all set up the vocals to be a series of button presses, and it's going to be a whole nother ball game to put that line with the thing, just like in Rock Band, so you can sing to it.
Right. I mean, that might even be a thing where they just don't
They might not.
It'll just be the instruments.
Yeah, they absolutely might not.
If you want to sing, you can at least hear your voice, but like we're not going to.
Yeah, we can't rate it.
Yeah.
It's just karaoke.
Yeah, basically.
So yeah, that's exciting and fun. Speaking of fun, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Mr. Tom Savage of the Ash and Raimi cartoon fame. Or that's not a comic book. What is it, Lisa?
Well, it's a comic
strip. It's
a
doodle. Yeah. It's a comic strip. There we go. That's the word I'm looking for. It's
a comic strip, and then he's doing a bunch of other stuff with it.
So. He's somebody that I've known for quite a few years, and last time I talked to him on my old show, I actually went to his apartment and got to see some of his classic Star Wars collection, which boxes and everything, and I was like, wow, this is really cool. And he wanted to come on and talk about his days of collecting classic Star Wars figures. So that's what you can look forward to next on the Really Big Fan Podcast. Welcome back, everyone, to the Really Big Fan Podcast. Acronym is sitting across the room from me in the void.
It's not really voidy today here.
No, it's
There's
not.
There's too much light going on.
But you can tell spring is coming.
Yeah. I am the void.
Right.
Yes.
But the reason for that is because we have an in-studio guest. This week's in-studio guest is Mr. Tom Savage, artist extraordinaire. And what you suggested we have you on for to talk about is your fandom of classic toys.
Yes. I used to be... really into vintage toy collecting. And then it was a great journey of watching where it was fun and then getting into the community and getting into it where it was like, where it got bad.
Oh, interesting. Well, let's start at the beginning. Now, when we talk about vintage toys, were there specific brands you looked for?
Yeah, for me, you know, it started with like a lot of nerds, I was big into Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I used to love going to this antique shop near my old apartment. And one day I'm walking in there, I'm always just looking for, you know, you'd find a bargain sometimes if you knew what you're looking for, you might be able to flip something, make some good money off of something or two, like comic books and things like that.
Right.
And one day I came across some of the Kenner line Star Wars ships. There was a Star Wars Vader TIE Fighter TIE Fighter. And then there was a TIE Interceptor from Return of the Jedi, and they were in their box. They were like only asking like $25 and $35.
Oh, wow.
I'm looking at them, and this was probably 2009.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at them and going, they look pretty good. At the very least, I didn't have time to like, you know, go on eBay and see what their value was, but I was going to bring them home. I took a gamble, picked them up, brought them home, checked them out, and then when looking on the rates, I realized I did pretty good. Mm-hmm. Probably flip them for like, you know, 50%, 70% more. But I decided I wanted to kind of just admire them. They look good on a shelf. And that's where it began. You know, you start looking.
Yeah.
I started looking into the more of the history. I grew. I missed the Star Wars generation because I was born in 83.
Okay.
But I lived in a house that had them.
Yeah.
My oldest brother was born in 77 or 78, and he had the Return of the Jedi line, which came out in like 1983. And so those toys were always around. And my middle brother had the He-Man. My generation for me was definitely the Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
That was what I collected. But all the stuff, like, you know, fizzled out through yard sales over time. And I hung on to my turtles, like kept them in pristine shape. Even as a kid, I was just, I couldn't lose a weapon.
Yeah.
Every weapon had to be with every character. I spend more time pulling them all out of these crates, setting them up. Good guys on one side, bad guys on the other side.
Yeah.
Putting all their weapons in their hands and setting them up. And then by the time I was done setting everything up, putting all the toys together, I'd already lost 2 hours of my life.
Yeah.
Time to go to bed or
take a bath. You're really enjoying hearing about this, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Because every Christmas, she watches me pull out my crate of Transformers and do the exact same thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
The entire living room every Christmas gets taken over by a sea of Transformers.
Yeah.
To the point he was sick of putting them together after a while, because he put like one half of them together.
Every couple of years, I'll replace guys with new versions of guys, or I'll get guys that they hadn't remade yet, and then I want to see what the army looks like now.
Gotcha.
So
it's like all over the living room.
What year were you born?
77.
Okay, so you're like right at my brother's age. So he was Transformers too. I was not allowed to play with his Transformers. It was the golden rule. You'll break them. You're a little kid, you'll break them. Like,
right.
Show me how to do it. I'll be careful.
Mm-hmm.
Never happened. And because no one ever showed me how to do them, even when I would get a hold of them, I was afraid of breaking them because they creak and they crackle.
Yeah.
And you'd think, oh, if I turn this wrong, I'm going to snap and my brother's going to beat me up or something, you know? So even to this day, I couldn't get into Transformer collecting just because I look at them and go, I still don't know how those things assemble.
That's funny because you mentioned one of your brothers, or you had, he had He-Man stuff.
Right.
And I wasn't allowed to watch He-Man.
Really?
Because my parents were going through a real religious phase at the moment, and there was, there was wizards. There was wizards and demons and stuff, and He-Man, so they're like, no, you're not allowed. So I would go to a friend's house with the He-Man stuff, but He-Man doesn't resonate with me because it wasn't allowed to attach to me at that age.
Gotcha. Yeah, and then, you know, I think that's why I don't handle the Transformers. If you hand me one right now, I could figure it out.
Right.
But I would still feel I would feel.
It is always weird when you have to put an unusual amount of pressure on any part of it. It's like, yeah. Even to this day, I'll be like, I should not have to like bend or twist that as hard as I do.
So when he got rid of some of the ones that he had, he was having me like photograph them as he was doing them. And I'm like, you're going to have to put them in whatever position you want them in because I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Right.
So you like, I would take a picture of it and then he'd have to transform it and then give it back to just me transformed.
I would take a picture. Like an assembly line where like I hand you a guy, you hand me a guy.
Yep.
And then I hand you a guy and you hand me a guy.
It's like a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah. But... exactly.
So from the Star Wars point of view, you know, it kind of ballooned after that. So then I started chasing down little pieces here and there. And I thought, you know, this will be a fun little hobby. I really started like really admiring and kind of getting nostalgic for the things. And I was really into Star Wars at the time. So even though I didn't have that like... super attachment from like the nostalgia point of view,
right?
The fact that I didn't have these toys, now I was getting them, and I was finding this whole new kind of like fun vibe out because there was a chase.
Yeah.
I'd go to flea markets, I'd go to garage sales, I'd try to find like incomplete pieces, and I'd find the parts and put them back together. I had like a cape for Vader that I had laying around, left over from my brother's collection. That was like, I knew it was in my parents' house. I dug that out, and I found the Vader. It was just that magic of putting that together.
Yeah,
yes.
Like two different. Like states that came.
I've seen guys that collect 80s G.I. Joe guys. They're the same way. They got like a box of guns and backpacks that like I don't have that guy yet, but when I find him, I've got all his stuff.
It was a lot of fun, and it's the dopamine I think from that too. You know that you find yourself really intrigued with it. Of course, there's the collector value. You never want to pay more than they're worth. You know, right. You always want to try and if you have to have, you pay retail, but otherwise the goal is to try and do it on a budget, mm-hmm. especially when you were a poor waiter like I was at the time,
mm-hmm.
or a bartender.
And we're talking about the Star Wars version, we're talking about the original Star Wars.
Original Kenner line.
Yeah, not like the 90s stuff that came out.
And so in doing my research, you know, trying to find out what parts went to what pieces, just make sure what I was missing, you know, you start getting a lot of education, but then you find yourself on the internet. And then you found yourself in social media groups with these collectors, and you think, this would be a great source to ask questions. And it is for a little bit. But then just like everything in the world, the internet ruins everything.
Yep.
And at one point, after about 5 years of collecting, I had almost a complete run of the original Kenner line.
That's amazing.
The Star Wars, The Empire, Return of the Jedi. And I just was tiptoeing into the Power of the Force line, which was like, the very last.
Yeah.
1985.
That was the ones with the coins.
Yeah, the collector coins. And I knew the whole legendary of the last 17 figures they put out were the rarest ones because, you know, people weren't buying them at the time. They
were
sitting on shelves and they, you know, got thrown away or grandmas bought them and gave them to kids and the kids didn't want them. So they're rare to find them on card. And, you know, I was so into it, so invested into it and like, then it starts getting kind of dirty after a while because like if you know what you're looking for and you find them in the wild,
mm-hmm.
you're essentially forced to take advantage of people.
Yeah,
sure.
If you're at a yard sale and there's someone selling a box of their kids' toys and you open it up and there's like Battle King Jawas in there worth $5,000.
Right, exactly.
You're in a moral complex of greed in that moment because it's either you don't get it. Or you have to tell the person what they have.
Exactly,
And there's that, like, internal conflict. And the reality is 99% of us just pay what they're asking.
Right.
And run off and giggle and throw in the cargo and sweat and go, oh, my gosh, I got these. And come home and brag about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, rarely was I ever in that situation, but I watched that a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's this little party that just kind of felt kind of sick. Cause, you know, it was just their ignorance. And, you know, it's not everyone's job to do the work for everyone else out there. If you're going to throw things away, you're not going to do the diligence to find what they're really worth,
mm-hmm.
then it's that whole, like, well, get what you get kind of thing.
Yeah.
If you don't want to do the work, you don't get the reward.
Right.
So, for me, it was tough watching that kind of stuff. It kind of made it less and less fun towards the end. And then it came time to get married. And no, my wife she was always supportive. She never told me to get rid of my stuff. I couldn't collect my things.
No, I laugh because I understand where the story is. It's a little bit like the 30-year-old virgin. Whatever, where he's got all those figures. Yeah, the 40-year-old virgin where he's got all that stuff. And it's not that anyone's telling him, you got to get rid of this stuff. It's just like, do you realize how much money you have here?
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
I listed it all, and it was all gone in 3 days.
Yeah.
And the lesson I took from it was this, though. This is the hard thing that a lot of collectors need to hear. You don't miss it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was all the chase. These were just pieces of plastic.
Mm-hmm.
It was just plastic. They're not worth what we're selling them for.
Right.
They're just not. To this day, I still look at a Vinyl Cave Jawa, which is one of the most expensive figures you can get, and go, this is not a $5,000 item.
Right.
There's so many of them out there. They're really not even rare. But we've somehow convinced ourselves that they're worth that.
Mm-hmm.
Just through like the supply and demand kind of delusion we kind of live in. You know? And I still look at it. Now, I wouldn't be dumb if I came across one for a good bargain. I'm going to buy it and flip it. You mm-hmm. know, they're going to suck me right back in.
Right.
But the thing I learned about the collecting in general, it's all dopamine. It's all chasing. It's all just, I need to find this. I have to have it complete. I'm missing this. I don't have, it's a mm-hmm. missing thing in your life. And I hate to get like weirdly preachy, but like when I was getting married, you know, prior, my life was kind of changing at that point, and it was like one of those things where I never wanted to get married. My wife and I both talked about how when we met on the green that we were never going to get married. We were never going to have children. Like that was a marriage, almost called the wedding kind of thing off.
Yeah.
In a conversation that one of us was teetering on the child conversation.
Yeah.
We got married under the agreement we'd never have kids. And my child turned 2 years old today.
Wow.
And so, you know, I sold the collection to help pay for my, like, contribution to the wedding.
Yeah.
It was all gone. And I did well. If I had on to it till today, I would have done way better.
That's always how that goes.
Oh, yeah.
That
was 2017.
I think I've sold most of my Magic cards with the exception of, like, one deck. Yeah. But there's definitely stuff that I've sold that you find out later is like, oh, that's 10 times what it was worth when you sold it.
So, friend
like,
well, Kevin.
There's nothing you can do about it.
Our friend Kevin sold a Pokemon card back in the day.
Yeah.
And I think he said he sold it for $300. It was one of the Charizards. That thing was like millions of dollars now.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I could have paid for everything.
Yeah, you don't know. That's the problem is that you're just going to sit with mountains of stuff and
well,
hope
that's the
something
hard
pays
part.
Off?
It's like that, you know, there's that line of where, okay, so it's like you're holding on to what you've got or whatever, even like, and this is not a jab, but like you have your stuff in the garage right now and you've got like these long boxes of runs and stuff like that. And if you had all the runs and then you listed them, you could probably get something for it depending on what it is. But it doesn't give you the indication of what is going to be popular or what is going to pop off and be that much of a demand.
In the same conversation with Star Wars toys, nothing to me is more amusing than what happened when Episode 1 came out and the rush to buy those toys.
Yeah.
George was laughing his ass off. He's going, what? All these clickers... armfuls of figures.
Yeah. You got some of that in the garage.
I do. We had a friend that also had a full collection of the old Kenner figures, but then he had a bunch of the 90s, like the Mattel stuff.
Oh, right.
And he was moving and he did not want to move it. So he's like, why don't you list this on eBay for me and we'll split it 50-50 because you're doing all the work. I'm like, all right. And I listed a bunch of stuff, but there was a bunch of stuff nobody wants.
Yeah.
There and was he like, was like, well, I'm not taking it with me,
it
so
like
do what you will.
Pepsi cans that were drilled in the bottom.
So much Phantom Menace merchandise.
Yeah, so much Phantom Menace. Yeah.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
So I'm just there, like, everybody come over and take things from the garage.
Like, I was saying for a while, if you had anything Star Wars, it was worth more than gold. It would always go up in value, except for that line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the question is that do you think that some of the collector fan base was toxic because they are Star Wars fans? Or do you think it's collectors? Because I really, as a Star Wars fan... fucking hate the Star Wars fans.
Yeah.
And they want to destroy everything, and everybody wants to complain, well, and no one's ever happy.
It's, you know, one thing I'm noticing is keep your world small.
Mm-hmm.
When your world is small, it's a happier world. And the worst thing that ever happened, I mean, social media has brought me closer to my family and friends that I don't, like, people you haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah.
It's a great way to stay in touch. But because it's changed so much now social media, you don't, your friends are not there anymore.
Yeah.
It's now, it's paid marketing, and groups and things
ads,
like that. Ads.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the groups get a lot of attention because they're special interests, so therefore their algorithm bumps up, so you see that stuff more. So all you're seeing is strangers who are just pissed off and angry.
Yep.
And I can't say that Star Wars, I mean, it's everywhere. There are, it's just like, there are good Star Wars fans. There's probably more good Star Wars fans than there are the toxic ones.
Yeah.
But the good ones,
they're probably not interacting like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Hanging out with their family watching Star Wars.
Yeah.
They're not on the internet bitching about the Star Wars they just watched. They're hanging out with their kid who's like playing with a stick in his backyard like it's a lightsaber.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they're living.
Yeah.
And that's the real world. That's their small world. The internet invites everybody in, and it's nobody good.
Yep.
You know?
Right.
Well, it's like, it's that opinion and assholes comment. You know,
right.
Everybody's going to have their own comment about it or whatever, but it's like, I've always, like, it was one of those things where, like, when I did use Twitter, like, I got off Twitter, but when I was on Twitter, I was like, I can't deal with the Star Wars fans on here because everybody is just so unhappy all the time. And it was, like, during Book of Boba Fett, like, even just being mad about, like, the bikes are too bright. And I'm just like, can you just be happy we have more Star Wars?
They can't.
That's one of the things that I always say is that, like, try, if you really enjoy something, like, for instance, X-Men, even when I get a bad X-Men movie, I still got an X-Men movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of awesome.
We got live-action Cowboy Bebop. And,
yeah, and know, people were like, this is bullshit. And I'm like, dude, we got more Cowboy Bebop.
I used to read Wizard Magazine. They had a section in the Wizard Magazine was a comic book magazine.
Right.
And they had a section there every month where they would do the fantasy movie casting. And you get so excited, you think, like, oh, that'd be great. And, of course, they nailed, you know, Patrick Stewart's Professor X.
Right.
5 years before he actually was cast.
That's awesome.
But we didn't get nothing. Because every Super movie they ever tried in the 80s failed, with the exception of Batman and the Superman movie. The Tim Burton and the
yeah,
and the Christopher Reeve stuff. Reeve, yeah.
Thank you. That was it, though. Just those big two names. Nothing else had a chance. And then, I think actually Spawn might have been one of the first.
Yeah, Blade was one of the first really kind of big ones. The Crow, kind of.
99. And, yeah, but you know, that was like.
Was Spawn 97?
Spawn was 97.
I think 97, yeah.
Yeah, because, like, I remember the soundtrack.
That was why I was thinking it was the soundtrack,
In track, because, like, the Crow soundtrack.
Because the Crow was 94.
Yeah.
See? We know it. We know those numbers because we know.
Or if you even look at the...
I'm obsessed with the Crow, okay?
Even if you look at the live-action Ninja Turtle movie that we got in, like, the mid to late 90s, like, that's a little bit of...
That's a good throw-in, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was... And you know what's funny is that's still the best one, like...
Have you watched Mutant Mayhem yet? It's not live action, but...
I did.
I love it.
It was okay.
Yeah.
I think it was really interesting to see them take a bold new direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can understand, like, the marketing point of view for the new kids. Like, these movies aren't made for me.
Yeah.
You know, I will get... There's so much content out there. Like, I have plenty.
Mm-hmm.
I have my original 1990 cartoon I grew up with. I've got the three movies. I've got, like, the Fox live action show that was hit or miss.
Right.
Wasn't that bad from a kid watching it. I enjoyed it. It was close.
What was the one that you told me I wasn't watching?
Oh, we didn't watch the third movie.
Yeah.
Because it just, like, you're not missing anything.
He was describing the third movie to me, and then he put on, like, a cartoon instead, and I was like, wait,
is this the one?
He goes, no, this is not it. You're not watching the third one.
Like, last summer before we saw Mutant Mayhem, because she saw the trailer, she's like, okay, I'm in. Like, Ninja Turtles was kind of my thing, and you knew of it, but you were like, okay, I'm in. I'm like, what, do you want to watch the original movies? Just, you know, to get a background in it. We didn't watch the Michael Bay ones, which I really would love to, because I think they get some parts of them wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I think they get some stuff really, really right, but then they get some stuff really, really wrong.
As Michael Bay does.
It's always weird when they take that liberty with, like, the source material origin stories and stuff.
Sure.
That always bums me out. I'm like, can you just stick with that part of the story. Mm. I mean, you can do little tweaks here if you want to, like, throw in something new, maybe, but, like, when you completely retcon the whole thing, that's always just annoying, but, like,
yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff that I think is a fair argument. I'm not going on the internet and be like, oh, how dare they? They ruined,
right.
My favorite phrase ever from the nerds, they ruined it.
Yeah. As he looks right into the camera.
No, what was I yelling before we went on, before he even got here? I kept going, X-Men is woke.
Yeah.
I kept yelling that. I'm like, X-Men's always been woke. You guys are just assholes. It's
literally about fighting racism. It's a parallel.
Literally. Yeah. Like,
and again,
but some of the things that you had said I wanted to touch on because I thought they were really key. The first being that, like, as you said, as new things entered your life that were very exciting, like getting married or having children or something like that, your priorities shift. And that doesn't always mean that you have to put down the things that you loved or that you have nostalgia for. But once again, your priorities will shift and you'll realize, like you did, is like having these shelves full of figures isn't as exhilarating to me as going to the park with my son or daughter, you know, and I mean, seeing them grow up.
It doesn't have to be that, like, on the nose, romantic almost. It's like, I think even just the moment you sell them, you do have that moment of realization where you realize, wow, that stuff was just stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it left my house and nothing changed. I didn't have a void. I wasn't like, I didn't give away something important.
No. All that's gone is time.
Yeah.
Collection of time.
But, no, that's the part I get to keep.
Yeah.
But I still got to keep that chase that was fun.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I went through the same thing with video games. You know,
yeah.
Like, I was like determined that I wanted it in NES again, like a classic NES.
Sure.
And I wanted to get all my old games back. And I got a hold of one. I plugged it in and went through all the trouble and picked up some classic games and popped them in. And the truth was, I mean, some of them were kind of fun still. But some of them had, like, you know, there was almost like a lag now because, like, we've been spoiled with that technology. That the truth is, a lot of those games aren't that great anymore.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, once you've played, you know, what's that game with jumping over the alligators?
Was it Pitfall?
Pitfall.
Yeah.
When you have Pitfall and then someone hands you, like, the Tomb Raider reboot from, like, PS4.
Yeah.
You look at the two games and kind of go, which one do I want to put 18 hours into?
Right.
You know? Let's be real.
That makes sense.
There's nostalgia, but it's like for a couple minutes. And that's what I found with toys, because I do a lot of these Comic-Cons and a lot of these comic conventions. Guess what's there? All those fucking toys.
Yeah. Yep.
And if I really need to see one, I walk by someone's booth who's selling it, look in their little case and go, oh, look at that.
Yep.
I had that. $300. I can do so much more with $300 than taking that piece of plastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I've always been more of a like experiences person.
Yes.
Versus a a things person.
Well said. That's exactly where I was going to go. I would rather pay for experience. I've gotten rid of everything I own.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. Like, there's some people who are really nostalgic for like physical media right now.
Yeah.
And I get that. I was a vinyl card collector for a while, or vinyl record collector. And there's some argument that some of the fidelity of certain albums from the time period sound better than the digital transfers that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you listen to a Beatles record or an old Led Zeppelin or a Rolling Stones record on vinyl, like a true original pressing, and then compare that to like the CD or the MP3 or something like that, there is definitely a loss of fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is that warrants... For the hardcore collectors who really want that ear, there's a handful of records you want to get. I recently got back into that. I sold the same thing with my vinyl. I sold all my vinyl, and I had a hell of a vinyl collection.
Yeah.
So we have a small one. For a tattoo. Got
that's
ripped fair. Off.
Whoa, that sucks.
I did the same thing. Went to yard sales, went to antique shops, picked up all these old records. I was like, wow, I'm getting like Queen albums for $3, you know?
Right.
Pop those on records I never even, you know, had heard before, like live records or something that never got transferred or, you know, updated.
That's the thing for me when it comes to my CD collection now, is I look through stuff and it's like, what is not on streaming?
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be.
Yeah.
There's a lot. There's a lot of media out there. But like when it comes to like movies and stuff, I used to have, again, I was all collector.
Mm-hmm.
I had a big, huge DVD collection and all this stuff that was like, sometimes you looked at it and you felt a sense of pride because you had all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And people come by and go, wow, you've got a great DVD collection. Wow, you've got a great Star Wars collection. But I guess there was this moment where you kind of realize it's still just plastic, you know? And when I was selling it all, some of it was just because I needed to get room, and like things were changing, and I could sense that. I was like, okay, look, Tom, this is a CD. It's a man. When you get into like graphic design, you kind of look at the world too. Like, you make this stuff, it's just manufactured.
Yep.
It's just print. The booklet that was so important to hold in my hand and flip through and see the liner notes. It's just a piece of paper that went through a machine and went zzzz and put ink on it. And I had to really finally just kind of like grow up and disconnect from that. That it had something more special because it was like the real copy.
Right.
So for me, it's like I got rid of the physical, but I took all my CDs and I was ripping them all to my computer for iPods and stuff. This is before even like Spotify and streaming was like a popular thing. And I could have all those albums on one little block. And it was out of my house. Yeah. I don't have to dust it anymore. And I was getting money for it that I desperately needed at the time, too.
Yeah.
And I think that's just kind of what started the trend of decluttering my life and letting things go. I still had it all. I could still experience the music. I could still hear it. I could still, if I wanted the lyrics, I can look them up on the internet.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's one of the things we were talking about before we got on the air, is how, like, the internet has changed the whole concept of, like, you know, I can go and hunt down like how many tracks didn't make this album, how many B-sides were on this single, and you know, where can I find, you know, where can I hear it?
That's the other thing, is like now they're screwing everybody by putting out three different versions of every album. One has like a special song on it. If you buy it from Target, if you buy it from, you know, online, you get this song. And I'm just like, I'm sick of that shit.
Yep. And there's been people that have started to speak out about even like the overly done vinyl production, because there's a shortage of those materials out there now. And you have some people that are out there like Taylor Swift, who are printing four albums in different colors, knowing her full fan base is going to buy all four albums. And it's a waste at that point.
You know, it's just one of those things where it's probably not even so much Taylor's choice in that issue. It's definitely the people who make her records for her. You know, that's where a lot of that stuff comes down to. And in the end, they're the ones who are making that money. She's making her money too.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah,
she's very involved in her stuff now. It wouldn't be surprised if she was. But there's definitely some other artists that they have no control over that whatsoever. And it's insane. But there's a lot of stuff that I think we were also used to having things, and it was like, I grew up a little bit later than you guys, but it was a lot of things were status items. And so you like, oh, if you were walking around school, you had to have a Discman. You had to have an iPod. You had to wear certain clothing. Like, I unfortunately was in high school during the Abercrombie and Fitch era of life, and Hollister and things like that. And so, like, you know, there was a lot to do about that, and things haven't improved in that area. Now things have just gotten more stupid, whether it's, you know, metal Stanley cups with the straws and all of that bullshit.
It's all the same disease. It's all the same.
It is.
It's just a new face. It's
exactly.
It's just dopamine. It's just chasing. It's just, it's all caring about what everyone else thinks of you.
Right.
I tell you, turning 40 was tough on my knees, but great on my soul. I got to this great place where, you know, when you really step out of yourself and stop thinking about what other people think about you and what their expectations are, and you keep in that small world.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people see me who've known me in the circuit know they know me as just that guy. And I know there's talk about how I'm kind of different and weird. I may know, like, I mean, it's no secret to a lot of people. You know, I'm bisexual, but I'm hetero romantic. You know, I'm married to my wife. I'm very feminine. I dress feminine sometimes. I like to have, I have a perm. I have long hair. I wear big earrings. I wear whatever the hell I want for me. And when I was younger, I would have dressed to impress somebody else.
Right.
I am all about what makes me feel good, you know? And my wife is like the best, because she's just like exactly there supporting that 100%. She knows that how I am, what I like, you know. She has no, like, nothing I do, how I dress is any kind of like identity for me. It's sometimes I just wear jeans and a t-shirt. Sometimes I wear lacy things. I do whatever I want because it makes me feel comfortable and confident.
Right.
And I think so many more people would love that. And I know when I get the looks when I go out, sometimes if I do like put on, you know, makeup or if I wear like nail polish, things like that. At 40, you know, some people my age look at, well, might give me a look and think, you know, that's what you did in high school when you were goth or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, no, no. I stopped doing that after high school to appease all of you fuckers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I still loved all that stuff. I loved looking and feeling like a rock star. I mean, if you gave me a red fake fur coat right now and like leather print on, I would rock the shit out of it.
Yes.
I don't care how many pounds I've gained. I will wear that because I would look amazing in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always joke, like, if you look at the movie Little Nicky, his mm-hmm. brothers, those little devils in hell.
Yeah.
There's like the one brother who has like the fur coat, leather pants. He's eating pizza and drinking schnapps. I'm looking at him going,
like, that's me.
Living the dream.
Sitting on a fire hydrant watching the world burn. I'm just like, God, if there was ever a spirit animal. But yeah.
Well,
so to the point that you were just saying though. So like if I zoom back out for a second. So a lot of things that you've made changes of now within your life and everything has been in the process of like feeling good or letting go of certain stuff and everything. So am I right in assuming though, despite the fact that you let go of the collections that you had and everything else, it didn't change your love for the thing?
Did not. No, I still love Star Wars, even though it's kind of like, I needed a break from it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, it's like having a friend who shows up all the time.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of like, okay, that's great. And they're always wanting to show you their new thing they've got. It's like they're showing up and they're trying to sell you something every day.
Right.
You ever have a friend who's like, oh, I'm doing the Tupperware party or I'm doing the whatever party.
Hey, girl, can I borrow your face?
While we're talking about that, you can subscribe on Patreon for $5 a month. Patreon.com/reallybigfanpod. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
So you get something for that.
Yeah.
Some friend fell into their pyramid scheme or something, you know, and you're like, oh, great.
Definitely not a pyramid scheme.
Oh, those are fun. Oh,
so, dude, is there, like you mentioned, sometimes you'll be at a show and you'll see a figure. It's interesting because that stuff doesn't leave up here.
Right.
Like you, I can tell you still have all of the facts and figures of like
groups watching because I enjoy just watching the
right.
people chase.
And I was going to say, it's interesting to me. You were talking about how with the collectors, I see that a lot because I still collect Transformers and some different toys. But you do get, you see people that you're like, well, yeah, I would take a deal if I got one, but I don't want to be that guy that is constantly ripping people off and is proud of
it. I got ripped off a lot, you know, before I started doing my due diligence.
Right.
It made me think of that thing that the controller that I found.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't technically being ripped off, there was a place that was called Daily Bins.
Okay.
And they were doing Amazon and Target overstock and stuff like that. And so they were offering, like, every Friday they would restock for, like, $10, like, per item or whatever.
Sure.
I found a Nintendo Switch controller, like a pro controller, that's, like, $70 or $80. I found it for $10.
Because the box like was dinged
things.
Up.
No, it was, like, the actual, like, from the Nintendo Switch, it was the,
Tears of the Kingdom? The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom
controller. Yeah, it was a Tears of the Kingdom controller.
Right.
And, like, it wasn't a ripoff, but, like, when you were talking about, like, when you get that rush of a deal, like, we were addicted to going there. Like, they closed, and it's probably a good thing.
I think I bought 5 different computer keyboards from there just because every week I'd be like, that's a cool keyboard.
You know, and if that would happen to me at thrift stores when vinyl before the craze back in 2010, you could walk into a Salvation Army and buy an LA Woman Doors record mint condition for 60 cents.
Nice.
Right.
Which was my very first record I found at Salvation Army. It was
nice.
Just the Doors, LA Woman. Nice. I'm like, I hadn't even heard the record. I had only heard like a handful of Doors the self-titled record and People Are Strange. Brought that home for, I didn't even have a record player, but I was like looking at it going, that's just such a cool album.
Yeah.
Like it had that like cellophane cut out in the cover where you pull it out and Morrison and the band would all come out. So, I mean, I hung on to that for years before I actually started collecting records.
Yeah.
And same thing, I was popping in this antique shop all the time and I was just like, there were some neat things about them. I was picking up Bowie records and stuff for a couple bucks.
Yeah.
You know, and after a while, this one, I was buying so many from this one collector that he realized I was buying multiple records. He gave me a discount.
Nice.
So after my game, they all knew I got 30% off everything I bought.
Right.
So I was just, I must have accumulated something like 500 albums in the course of like 2 years. Just damn. Picking from just yeah. like, you know, some extra tip money from the night from bartending. Mm-hmm. You know, I live next door to this place. I'd walk in there.
Yeah.
Fumble through the boxes. There's like multiple vendors who would just go around, and I did. Man, I had a great collection.
The only thing I ever found at a Salvation Army was I found a first pressing of Purple Rain.
Oh yeah,
yeah, those $5.
Oh man, those were like as common as like Peter Frampton Come Alive. Right? You know, like I must have like stepped on so many of those. Just like
that's the only one I ever found.
That's what's going to happen to all those Taylor Swift records.
Yeah,
they're going to end up at Salvation Army. Like 20 years from now.
One year, maybe. I found 3 Radiohead CDs at once at a Salvation Army. Yeah. I thought I hit
that's
the
thing
jackpot.
I always, like, that's
it was
the,
like Kid A, Amnesiac, and OK Computer.
That's the thing. Whenever I would go to the thrift store, is I would go right to the CD collection, and I'd start going through. I'd be like, somebody got rid of the Japanese import of the Bends with 3 extra songs? Yeah, I'll pay $3 for that. Sure.
I would go through the records and actually go through the hardcover books. I found it was for a long time people just weren't paying attention except for like Bezos, I guess, with Amazon. He caught on to it first. like I found like first edition of Godfather hardcover.
Nice.
Flipped it on eBay after I read it, which by the way, man, the book is so much better than the movie.
Oh yeah.
It really was. I hate to be that guy who says that, but like it really was. Mm-hmm. Like it the movie is true to the book. Anyway.
I still haven't watched the movie. It's on our list. We have a list of movies that are going. Right
that's
now.
Actually so that's gonna be a double hitter because I've never actually watched it either.
Oh shit! Really? Okay, so we're both there. All right.
Godfather.
My dad used to have we got him for Christmas one year the DVD box set of like all the Godfather movies. And like I know I've seen bits of Godfather movies. I've never actually sat down and watched any of them.
It is a sit down, put your phone down movie.
Yeah.
One of Pacino's best films.
Oh, I'm sure.
Next to like Dog Day Afternoon.
People wouldn't still be talking about it to this day if it was a terrible fucking movie.
Yeah, it's a good film.
Unless it's Boondock Saints. Then it's terrible and also amazing.
Which you can, if you subscribe for $5 a month, you can hear my thoughts on movies.
Boondock Saints.
Our exclusive Patreon podcast.
They did do that one.
We did.
Like a week or two ago. And I was like, oh, yes, we get to watch this again. I love it.
Yeah.
I always love Boondock Saints because Doc from Fraggle Rock is the bartender.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's one of the things, like, we talk about nostalgia. We want to share with the kids. That's what I'm waiting for my kid to just be old enough. I've been showing them to her since she was a baby.
Right.
I kept of all the DVDs I sold. I kept the box.
The Fraggle Rock. Yes.
Nice.
Even though I can stream them, I've got them.
Yeah.
I'm saving those because they come off streaming. I'm not gonna have to go through the pirating thing. I'm
yep.
Right.
Pop those in, and she's gonna love that. She's 2. She watches them with me, but I can tell she's not into it because it's still more story driven.
Right.
And she's all about dance parties.
Yep.
And numbers and Elmo right now, and I'm just like, Elmo,
she'll get there.
You can have your time, Elmo, right now.
Elmo being like very angry about a rock. you've seen those, right?
No. Wait,
so there was a whole subplot that was going on within Sesame Street where there was the little girl and she had the friend that was the rock named Rocco. And he was mad he got the cookie.
Yeah.
He's a rock. He can't eat anything. And like just watching Elmo become progressively more unhinged was hilarious to me.
And I've seen these episodes.
Yeah.
Like, I watch so much Sesame Street with my kid right now. There's a song that's living rent free in my house right now. It's like, I don't know who this artist is, some pop artist I've ever heard of. It's the whole theme of the last couple seasons is the problem solving. It's I wonder, what if, let's try. That's what they keep on saying when they have a problem. So this girl comes out and she's like auto-tuned to all hell. She's like, I wonder what if, let's try. And they all Elmo and everyone singing with her. It's like a 5-minute long song. And they play it like every other episode.
Oh no.
I'd say fast forward. I'm like, we're not doing it. I cannot do it today. I'll be like on the golf course, even though I'll be team of my arm. I'm like, I got a lot of rough here. There's a tree root there. I'm kind of uphill lie. My feet are below my stance. I wonder what if. Let's try the three-eyed rescue instead.
It's working.
It's like the Beverly Hills Cop theme that kept playing.
I was going to say, our generation had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
You swear, you should litmus test him on this and see if he's seen it. At some point, Hootie and the Blowfish was on Sesame Street. years and years ago.
I think
was it them or did you figure this out already?
I think this is what happened. So whenever I hear him sing Letter B, I think it's the letter B. And the reason for that is because I found it on YouTube. They actually did the Beatles Let Her Be.
Oh, okay. So you were back in the 70s,
and it was about the letter B.
Yeah, they do a lot of that kind of stuff. It's kind of cute.
No, because at one point he was thinking that Hootie and the Blowfish did it. Instead of doing Let Her Cry, it was the letter B.
When the sun comes up tomorrow, let her be. Yeah. And I always think, oh, it's the letter B.
That's great.
But it's not. Well, Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm sure we'll do this again. Is there anything you want to plug? I know you, like I said, when we started, you do a lot of art. I see you all at the conventions all the time. You got board games you've been working on and stuff.
Yeah, right now I've been working on my second board game. It's a survival horror game called One of Us. That's been in production for about 5 years, but it's pretty much like 90% done right now.
Sweet.
My comic strip, Ash and Raimi, it's about two cats who live with an alien. It's more of a comic strip, but like in the vein of like... Calvin and Hobbes,
yeah,
Peanuts and things like that. I put those out for free on my social media, ashraimi.com, and there's a first book for that, but then right now I'm working on animations for the first time with
them. Awesome.
So I'm sponsoring a comedy festival in May called the Comedy Roll. I think that's what it was called. Yes, the Comedy Roll. And it's like a short film festival. So those animations are going to be shown there. One of my voice actresses for the Ash Raimi, I can share first time here if you want, is going to be Marilyn Giolotti, who played in the Clerks film as Dante's
girlfriend, wasn't it?
What was her name? Veronica.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Number 37, that's the one.
Yeah.
So she's doing the voice.
That's awesome.
I tried to get Brian O'Halloran, who plays Dante, but I didn't hear back from him, so he missed out on that.
He's a busy man.
It would have been cool. I know that for a while, but he's doing a lot of shows right now, so I'm like, all right, I ran out of time and his response on that one. So that's coming out, and then, we've got some a lot of illustration work. I'll be at Motor City Comic Con, my next big show here in Detroit, and... yeah, if you got that, stop by and see me.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you again real soon. And we'll be back with the Really Big Fan Podcast right after this. Thank you very much to Tom for joining us for the Really Big Fan Podcast. As he said, you can check out his work over at... I almost said Sam and Raimi. That's not what it is. Ash
and Raimi. That is a director.
Right, exactly.
Ash and Raimi.
Ash and Raimi. Yes, that's exactly right. And I'm sure we're going to have Tom Shaw on the show again. We talked for like a half hour before we even got sat down for the interview.
You guys talked like 15 minutes after as well. So yeah, there's a lot.
This will happen again for sure. But it's time to wrap the show up now with our serotonin boost. Do you have one?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's not going to be exciting for anyone else once again.
Usually isn't,
but I got to see Cypress Hill, photograph Cypress Hill, take some pictures of Be Real.
Was it really Cypress Hill?
It didn't have the other guy in it that you really liked.
Yeah, I was missing the hype.
It is Be Real, and now there's Sendog, who doesn't sound like the former.
He does not.
So he doesn't sound really goofy when he yells, "Where'd the shit go down?" But I got to see that song. It wasn't in my three songs, but it was the fourth song.
Oh,
so
that's
I was
nice.
Just like, yeah, I get to see it. And my buddy Mezgarth was there, and when I was walking back up the ramp, I saw him, and like we hopped in there, and when the shit goes down, you better be ready. And we were just jamming for a second, and I'm like, that was great.
Sendog, that's the guy that I miss.
No, Sendog is the guy that was there last.
Is it? Oh, it says 88 to 95, 98 to the present.
Yeah, so maybe he just doesn't say it as funny as he used to.
Yeah, maybe his voice isn't what it was.
He just doesn't say it as goofy, because I did take a video, but like maybe he hams it up in the studio, and then when he does it live,
maybe it was Mellow Man Ace. He was vocals in 1988.
Yeah, I have no idea. You'd have to look whenever that album came out.
I don't know enough about Cypress Hill. I just know that I liked Black Sunday, I think it was called.
You know, honestly, I don't know a ton of Cypress Hill either myself. That's the funny part, is like I know like the classics or whatever, but I know Be Real more as like a weed icon.
Yeah.
So it's like he might be on somebody's Smokers Mount Rushmore, but I don't think he'd be on everyone's.
Mm-hmm.
Or just people that really know, but like Cypress Hill really was like one of the first rap groups to rap predominantly only about weed.
Yes.
So like I think they run into that.
They even predate Snoop Dogg.
Yes. So, because like Snoop talked about other things other than smoking weed.
He did.
You know, you have people that are like,
but every Cypress Hill song is about smoking weed.
Yes, every single one. So, but it, you know, it was cool to see, and I was glad I got to do it, and I got lucky being connected with the cannabis side of things. Actually, is what got me into that show. So, thank you, weed. I like to thank weed.
Thank you, weed.
I'm thanking weed. Weed is my serotonin boost this week.
Okay. Fair enough. I mean, it is, you know, 420 was last weekend, so it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
It would be.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty much my 420 celebration there. Like, we did the cannabib thing earlier in the week, but I was really just waiting for the Cypress Hill concert.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm glad you talked that long because I couldn't remember what mine was. I was like, I don't even have a serotonin boost this week, but I do.
It's soup?
Late Night with the Devil.
Oh, yeah.
That movie was fun as hell.
That thing was awesome. I asked our group chat if everybody had watched it yet, and Sam and Alex had both seen it.
Yeah.
And they were like, it's so good. Oh, my God.
It was really fun.
Sam said she could watch that guy in anything.
I want to say it didn't exceed any expectations I had for it, but it absolutely met every expectation I had for that movie.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Honestly, it was great. You didn't know where it was going the mm-hmm. entire time. I think there was the only that one moment, and it was literally like 30 seconds before they actually showed the end result of things.
Yeah.
Where I went, wait, this is where this is going.
Yep.
But it literally, like, up until that point, there was no indication where you were going to end up.
And right.
It was pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, it's a very good movie. It's on streaming now, thanks to Shudder. So if you have access to it, I highly recommend it.
I'm not going to lie, I kind of wish we would have seen that one in a movie theater.
I was thinking about that.
Like,
and
after we watched it, I was like, damn, that actually would have been good to see in a theater to be immersed in it.
I don't know. I wouldn't have minded, but also I like watching movies at home.
I know.
I like sitting on my couch.
Yeah. No, I was thinking like the color and stuff like that. Like I would
interesting,
have liked to,
yeah.
I would have liked to seen the color the way it was intended to be seen in the audio.
Some of the things they do with the aspect ratio might have been interesting.
Yeah,
definitely. On a movie theater.
Maybe. So, hey, Senate Theater, get that movie.
Yeah. So we can see it on a big screen.
Yes.
We'll be back next week with another really big fan podcast. Until then, make sure you're following us on all the social media at Really Big Fan Pod. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're everywhere. Are we on Threads?
Yes.
All right.
You keep asking that. And yes, we're there, but nothing ever happens there.
That's fine. No. All right. The only time I check Threads is when you actually send me something from Threads.
Yeah, it's fair. You still use that icky place.
And if you're listening to the podcast version and you'd like to watch us do the show live, we do it on twitch.tv/reallybigfanpod Wednesday nights around 7:30. So until next week, have a good time, and we'll talk to you.
I'll let you know if I survive the draft, guys.
I hope you survive the draft.
I'm not going to war. I mean the NFL draft.
We were talking about at work today. We were talking about, like, what would you do if they called your name for the draft? Because we were joking about, like my boss Gail, he's a really big sports fan. He's a really big football fan. So he's real excited the draft is in Detroit. And we were like, what would Gail do if they were like, and drafting for the Cincinnati Bengals?
No, the next thing would be like, you're with your friends and all of a sudden your name gets called. And if I'm in that group of friends, I'm running over to you and immediately going, Harry, did you put your name in the goblet of fire? That's literally what I would do. Literally.
That would be so good. That would be so good. Yep. I'd be, I was saying that I would take the check and then intentionally get injured in the first game. Like the first play you put me on the field for, I would find the biggest guy and I would dive at his legs.
Do you ever wonder if that's what CM Punk does?
I mean, maybe.
I'm not going to lie. That's kind of what I thought was happening with Kid Cudi. It was like, did he intentionally
just
jump off the stage? Drop off the stage? His foot so he didn't have to go on tour.
Did he pull a Trey Cool? It was like, if I run off stage, no one can make me play an encore.
I guess, I don't know. It looked real funny.